Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
All right, we're back at it today on Peter's Proffer in the courtroom of current events, and we're going to talk plea deals. So we've had a lot of listener questions that kind of circulate around the topic, and we're going to get into how these plea deals come into place, if there's always plea bargaining going on, what you can actually bargain for, whether there's any abuses of this system in place, and whether it leads to any wrongful convictions or things like that. We're going to get into all that today. It's me and Pete Sardis here. We're just going to go through it the old-fashioned way. No guests, no interviews, nothing like that. But as always, we'd love for you guys to rate and subscribe to our podcast. Give us any comments or questions that you guys may have, and let us know what you want to hear about. If you have any questions or comments, at Tragos Law on all social media, or email me at petertragos.com. Okay, so today we're talking all things plea deal and plea bargain. We're going to jump into what it actually is and just kind of a general definition to get us started. I know in the intro I said it was just me and Pete Sardis, but my dad decided to join us for the podcast since he's the criminal expert around here as it is. So, Dad, why don't you start out by just kind of giving us an overview, overall definition of what a plea deal is and what that plea bargaining process is. Actually is, and then we'll get into the details of how it works and what kind of factors are taken into account.
Well, a plea bargain is a deal. It's a contract. You negotiate with the state or the federal prosecutor. You negotiate various things. We'll cover what you negotiate. But once you negotiate it, you enter in an agreement or a contract, which hopefully lessens your charge or lessens your sentence. And at that point, you sign the agreement or you agree to it on the record. Then you go before a judge. And hopefully the judge accepts it.
So it's actually a contract between you and the prosecutor.
Right, but it specifically says that the judge is not part of the contract.
Okay, does the judge have to approve it, though?
A judge has to approve it. It happens rarely, but every once in a while you'll find a judge that thinks that the plea bargain is either too easy. Normally they don't think it's too hard. So if they
When you say too easy or too hard, what do you mean?
I mean that it gives too many benefits to the defendant.
So too light of a plea bargain,
right,
versus too harsh, meaning too much time. They don't usually throw it out for being too many years in prison or too many community service hours.
Right. So, and they do. The judge will say, look, you know, for this kind of crime, this guy should go to prison. He shouldn't get probation. And he'll say, I won't accept it.
Okay, Pete, why don't we talk about what are the different kinds of plea bargaining that can go on throughout a case? Because it's not just, okay, I'm arrested and charged with murder. I'm going to, you know, bargain 10 years in prison versus life. There's all sorts of things that can be bargained for when you're in a plea bargain dealing with a criminal prosecution.
Right. And the where it starts is, what is the prosecutor potentially going to charge you with? And from our perspective, that's important because that very well may have an effect on what the possible sentences can be. If there are any minimum mandatory jail time requirements, you know, is it a felony, is it a misdemeanor, different levels of charges. So you start the negotiation to see if you can minimize what the prosecutor is actually going to charge you with.
So, for example, you come in and it can either be battery with a deadly weapon, just battery, just assault, misdemeanor battery versus felony battery. You can kind of work down lesser included to try to work with the prosecutor on what they're actually going to charge your client with, because misdemeanor battery carries with it a maximum of 1 year in prison. Third degree felony battery can be 5 years in prison.
Right. So if they charge you with something like, for example, battery on an elderly person, that's a 3 year minimum mandatory.
Exactly. So when you're talking about the actual charge that you're charged with, bargaining for that can set up the length of the sentence and what the punishments are.
And you need to get in there on this bargaining for charges. Most prosecutors don't like changing a charge once they've already made the decision. So you try to get in there within the first 10 or 15 days from the date you're arrested, because that's when you have the most leeway to decide which charge the prosecutor can give you.
So that's when you actually, as the defense lawyer, can call the prosecutor and talk about Because sometimes defense lawyers know more about the facts than the prosecutors do, either by talking to the defendant or talking to some witnesses the defendant may know, and they can say, listen, it really fits better in this charge versus that charge, so that you start out on the right foot, limiting what the potential penalties can be, which is the second kind of bargaining that can take place.
Well, that I was going to say, the second part of this discussion is then you negotiate facts. And I'll tell you...
Well, actually, the facts can be the third part.
Well, let me tell you what I'm talking about, because maybe we're talking different things. Okay. But especially in federal court and especially in white-collar crime cases, for example, the loss amount, or if it's a fraud, if the amount of money that was defrauded is greater, for example, in the state of Florida than $20,000, it has a different penalty than if it's less than $20,000. So being able to negotiate how many, for example, dollars are going to be attributed to a particular defendant's crime may dictate what their sentencing options are going to be.
So just so we can set out what the three kinds of bargaining are, because the more we talk about them, the more we realize they're all intertwined. But it's charge bargaining, sentence bargaining, and fact bargaining. So charge bargaining we've already discussed in detail. Talking about fact and sentence bargaining I think is the most obvious one that people understand. You know, it's a 5-year maximum. Can we do 1 year in prison? And the prosecutor offers 4 years and we settle on 2 years. You know, that's sentence bargaining. You can bargain about community service hours, continuing alcohol monitoring. You can bargain about what the fines are going to be, what the restitution's going to be, what the invest costs. You can bargain any part of a sentence in a criminal plea. But I think one of the more interesting ones is the fact bargaining. And Dad, I know you've had these in a lot of cases where what's important sometimes, what Pete's talking about is one way of bargaining with the facts, but another way is when your client's actually going to plea to something, what facts are going to be in the, what would they call it? In
the
document.
Pre-sentence report.
Right, in the pre-sentence report in a federal case, what facts am I actually going to agree to? Was I the linchpin in this conspiracy, or am I going to agree that I just, you know, signed this document fraudulently and that's the only fact I'm going to actually plead to on this agreed upon sentence so that we can make it work in the entirety of this plea bargain? So why don't you explain how facts can be bargained with?
Well, in federal court, they're really significant.
Right, and that's most of what we're talking about. Yeah. In state court, most of the time, it's just the probable cause affidavit. That's what they read in the plea bargaining.
But in state court, normally, you're just doing a sentence. Either you agree, the state says, okay, we agree to 2 years, we agree to probation. That's just a sentence because the facts don't really manipulate the guidelines as much. In state court, the big exception in state court is injury. Injury facts do really escalate the guidelines in state court. But in federal court, you're talking about how many dollars were stolen. You're talking about was anybody injured. You're talking about did you have a minimal role. All those things affect your sentence.
So, and we'll probably do another, I don't know if we've done one on the sentencing guidelines, but we can do that another time. We don't have to get too much into the sentencing guidelines. But so in state court, you have a chance to bargain with the charge before the case. And then basically when you're coming to an end, you bargain for the sentence. But in federal court, there's more. That's what you're saying. So, and I've seen you go through this on a lot of these documents, and this can be sometimes some of the hardest stuff. And some people just hire you to do this. Like, we've had clients that just hire my dad to handle their plea bargain when they know they're going to plead guilty because of such an effect that you can have on what you actually plead to and how it can affect you in maybe some civil suits that come or in some more criminal charges that may come or if you're cooperating, which we'll talk about how that comes into play in plea bargaining. Why don't you talk more about what do you do with the actual facts? What goes back and forth with you and the prosecutor and whoever does the sentencing guidelines?
Federal plea bargains are always in writing. The state are not. So you could have a 15 or 20 page document, which is the contract. And it goes through, okay, your client really had a minimal role or your client supervised 5 people, which gets you a higher score. The actual loss is $1 million, which is going to get you a higher score. All of those things, did you do it in multiple districts? How many victims did you have? All of that impact in a...
And how you actually even committed the crime, too.
Oh, yeah. In the pornography cases, for instance, if you had X number of images, those number of images actually increases your score. So you've got all these things you consider, plus you've got to consider there may be crimes in other districts, and you may have to negotiate a global settlement with other districts into this one plea agreement.
Right. So the federal way is more complicated, but that's where the facts can really become important when you're doing this plea bargain. So the next question then. Does the state have to offer you a deal? Do they have to engage in plea bargaining?
Absolutely not. They're not obligated to do anything. The question is, do they and not?
Well, we're going to get into why they do it. That's the next.
So the general answer is no.
They don't have to, and the defense doesn't have to either. Right, Dad. The defendant doesn't have to engage in it either. They can say no deals, we're going to trial.
Absolutely. And you have many clients that do that.
Okay, so now let's talk about what pleas can actually be entered at the beginning of a case.
There are three pleas you can actually enter at the beginning of a case, and it's going to be guilty, not guilty, or no contest, or nolo contendere, which is a Latin term for it.
Okay, so Dad, let's talk about the processes when you enter those pleas. If you start out day one with a plea of guilty, what happens?
Well, then it's over. Then you'll move to sentencing, and the case could be over. But people need to understand that that not guilty at the beginning of a case that a lawyer does,
yeah,
that not guilty just starts the process.
So basically most people just plead not guilty and then they figure the rest out later.
99% of the
whether time. Or not they're going to eventually plead guilty, which we're going to talk about, you know, changing your plea and withdrawing your plea and things like that. But if you show up day one and you plead guilty, you're basically just asking the judge what your sentence is going to be.
Right, because you're not getting discovery, you're not doing any work. All your rights.
What about no contest, Pete? What does that mean? And what's the distinction between pleading guilty and no contest, whether it's day one or later on when you accept a plea deal?
And the distinction is guilty indicates that you actually admit that you committed the actions that you're charged with. No contest means that you cannot contest the evidence that the state has against you. And the distinction, frankly, in state court for the most part is not a big deal to most people, but it can have huge implications. For example, the difference between a guilty and a no contest, for example, in a drug case may determine whether or not you're getting a 2-year driver's license suspension.
Right.
In federal court, the difference in guilty and no contest may mean whether you receive credit for the points that you would get in the reduction of your sentence for acceptance of responsibility.
Okay, and then we've already talked a little bit about when you start with a not guilty plea, that just begins the discovery process. You plead not guilty, you force the state to give you whatever evidence they have against you, and that's kind of when you start the plea bargaining type of negotiations with the state. So eventually, Dad, can you withdraw all of these different pleas?
You can easily withdraw a not guilty and change it to a guilty. That happens all the time, very common. It's far more difficult to withdraw a guilty or a no contest plea because at that point you have admitted your guilt and there has to be some really strong reason that the court lets you get out of a guilty plea because you have to realize they want finality in a case. Someone pleads guilty, it's not final if they can just come back and say, hey, I've changed my mind. So if you plead guilty, you better be sure.
Is there a way to withdraw your guilty plea or your no contest plea without an appeal?
Yes, you can file a motion with the court,
okay,
giving the court some reasons like you were drunk the day
or
you did
coerced
it.
Or something.
You were coerced,
like
right? You were
somebody,
you know,
lied
high
to you
on drugs.
Or whatever, right? They beat it out of you.
Yeah, there's got to be some really strong reason. Of course, courts don't like to reverse guilty pleas.
Okay, so while the prosecutor doesn't have to engage in this and the defendant doesn't have to engage in this and the judge doesn't necessarily have to be a part of it, 90% of cases or over 90% of cases actually end in some kind of plea deal in the criminal courts.
Yes. And in fact, we said the judge doesn't have to be. Judges cannot be part of the
plea. They can't be a party to it, but they
right.
can insert themselves sometimes even if they're not supposed to.
Right. But they're not supposed to actually be involved in it.
Okay. So knowing that 90% of cases end in a plea deal, what is the reason for that? And we can start and we can separate it however you want. We can either talk about it from a state attorney's side or from the defendant's side. So let's start with why does a state attorney or a prosecutor in the federal court, why do they want to engage in these plea negotiations and why do they take a plea deal? A lot of time they have a ton of evidence. They have a video of a murder taking place. Why do they engage in this process?
Well, there's also times when they don't have a lot of evidence.
Well, and I understand
and,
those.
And that's it's a weak case and they want to get rid of this case but not take the chance on trying
so
it.
So what are all of the reasons that state attorneys may engage in plea bargaining and take a deal less than the max? Well, one of the reasons is they don't have a very good case. They're afraid to lose. What other reasons are there?
They have a lot of time spent on other cases, and they don't have the time to spend on this case.
So limited resources. Right.
That is a big one. Another is they may just do it because it's the right thing. You know,
for justice.
Yeah, for justice, like a mother and a, you know, a mother and a father fighting, and the both of the parties want things to be okay or to go away. They may give a deal in those kind of cases because it's the right thing to do.
Okay, and then, you know, some other times, if it's a really high-profile case, they don't want to lose it. So if you can get a finality of a plea deal that's got a big jail sentence, you can call it a win as a state attorney versus, you know, something like the O.J. Simpson case happening where you think it's a slam dunk, you go and you lose, and then it becomes a, you know, a mark on your state attorney resume. So right. Sometimes, you know, taking a deal, at least you can say we won, he's behind bars, et cetera,
high profile case, so that works both ways.
I agree.
Sometimes there's so much publicity they can't afford to give a deal, so they actually have to go to trial.
Right. I agree. And then there's also the argument of judicial economy. There's a lot of cases. The docket's getting clogged. If they tried every case that they could win, there wouldn't be enough time to try all these cases, especially if some defendants started, you know, saying we want a speedy trial and things like that. So judicial economy, I think, is another reason.
Yeah. A lot of times prosecutors also know what the judge is going to do in a case. And they say, look, we know that in these facts, this judge always gives 2 years. So let's go ahead and make a deal for 2 years, get rid of the case, because we know that's what's going to happen anyway.
And sometimes they'll know if we just decide, if the criminal defense attorney, which you can do, this is another thing to kind of throw into the wrench of plea bargaining, you can go and plead open to the court and not take any deal that the state attorney is offering you and just say, judge, we're going to plead guilty and whatever you sentence my client with, we're going to take. And it's a risk. But like you said, sometimes we know what the judges are going to do in these types of cases, not as much as the state attorney, who some people don't know, but a lot of state attorneys are stationed basically with a judge in their courtroom, assigned to that judge, and they see what that judge does on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases. So sometimes, especially in misdemeanor court, it's easy to tell what the judge is actually going to do. So those are some reasons that state attorneys may want to engage in plea bargaining. Pete, why don't you talk about some of the reasons that defense attorneys want to engage in plea bargaining?
You know, from a defendant standpoint, the client has to make a determination about what they want to do. And a lot of times a client makes a decision, for example, if a case has particularly embarrassing facts, they may not want those facts to be in the public record, to be on TV. So they may make a deal with the state attorney's office or the prosecutor's office to limit any exposure they may have to just bad press. It does bring finality, just like in state attorneys. They know this is the deal. This is what's going to happen, as opposed to I may go to trial and I could get anything from probation to 5 years in prison. At least you know it's going to be 1 year of prison or it's going to be 6 months of probation. You just know what the outcome is going to be.
And that actually is a bigger factor than people maybe listening understand is if you're stuck in a criminal prosecution where they're digging into everything in your life, all your friends and family, everybody thinks you did this, you know, you've got it hanging over your head. Having some finality, you know, even if it's taking some kind of plea deal, is a big factor in the plea bargaining.
And you have to realize, and I hate to say this, but those defendants that are incarcerated during the term of the pendency of their case, there comes a point when they realize, I'm just sitting in jail anyway, so I might as well take the deal since, you know, the deal is I'm just making it up 6 months. I've already spent 3.5 months here already.
Right.
What else? You know, the risk is kind of important because a lot of times, hopefully, the defendant's listening to his lawyer or her lawyer and he says, look, you realize if we go to trial on this thing, if this evidence comes out, you're gonna score higher. You're looking at additional potential sentencing that's going to be far more severe. So you make a decision whether I'll take the deal to avoid the possibility of a far worse sentence.
So, Dad, why don't you talk about how cooperating with the prosecution in their case can kind of come into play as leverage for the defendant or the defense attorney to use in plea bargaining?
Well, in certain cases, especially in federal court, if you have nothing else to bargain with, then the only way to reduce your sentence is what's called a 5K1 under the sentencing guidelines, and that is substantial assistance. It works in state court too, but in state court, they've got a lot more flexibility than the feds do. The feds have to actually follow the guideline in order to reduce your sentence. And it also does away with all guideline recommendations. If you fall under those, regardless of what the guidelines recommend, you can get a substantially lower sentence than you would have originally gotten. And, you know, unfortunately, and what people were talking about before, about, you know, it's a lawyer's job to recommend whether you take a plea bargain or not take a plea bargain. But it is also a lawyer's job to recommend should you go to trial or not go to trial. The final decision is always the client's decision. These are one of those times when the client has to make that decision based on a recommendation.
Do you think that this plea bargaining and plea deal system that we have in America leads to innocent people going to prison or, you know, wrongful adjudications of guilt and things like that?
I think it does. We can show the example of these recent cases where we show the bribery to get your children into college. Well, think of the fear. 14 people pled guilty to the original charges. The ones that didn't plead guilty, they put money laundering charges on those people, so they're facing another 20 years in prison. So it certainly was an incentive for that first group to plead guilty to avoid giving the 20 years. Whether they were guilty or not, they didn't want to take the chance.
So I guess the point is, because of the piling on of charges and, you know, the fear of the maximum sentences, which I think is interesting that that's how we as lawyers talk about, you know, third-degree felony, a maximum of 5 years, you know, first-degree misdemeanor, maximum of 1 year. We don't talk about what you actually get or what the minimums are, things like that. We always talk about the maximum because we have an obligation to explain to the client that this is the worst-case scenario. You get convicted, and the judge sentences you to 5 years in prison.
We can't guarantee the outcome.
Exactly. So we can't guarantee that it's going to be less than the max.
Right.
So that is kind of that may be kind of where I have an issue with it. Pete, do you have an issue with kind of our plea deal or plea bargaining system? I obviously see the benefits, and so let's kind of just discuss the benefits of the systems, the downfalls of the systems, and anything we think may make it better.
All right. I don't think it's that bad, and I'll tell you why. Let me use a different judicial system. China, where you sit in jail someone from pays enough money or proves your innocence.
Okay.
So our system, I think, works as
it's
well.
Better than China.
Yeah,
I think
as
we can
well
all
as any
that.
Other system. The problem that I think we have is because, and I guess it may just be a system of our jurisprudence and the way we sentence cases, our sentences generally in the United States for crimes are higher than the sentences that you would find in other countries for similar crimes, okay? So I think that the plea bargaining system gives prosecutors and defendants an opportunity to make cases go away in a range that very well may be more realistically favorable to the defendant.
Yeah, and understand, prosecutors really control the
right.
system because if they don't agree to it, it doesn't happen. And although he's talking about China, there are countries in South America, Panama, for example, that are civil systems. They don't have plea bargaining in those systems. In those systems, either you plead guilty to the charge or you go to trial. Those are your only two options.
Right, and I agree. And I'm not saying our system is the worst or worse than any of these countries. I just think that there are some things in our system where, you know, there is no minimum. There is no, like, well, you know, this, they don't have that much evidence, or this isn't that bad, so maybe if we go to trial, the maximum you can get is 30 days as opposed to a year or something. I get that we have the first, second, third degree misdemeanors and things like that, and that's why they're set up like that. But it's kind of like in civil cases, you can go sometimes with a high low. No matter what the jury comes back with, there's not going to be a verdict more than 100, but it's not going to be less than 50. So if the jury comes back with 500, the defense only pays 100. If the jury comes back with zero, the defense still has to pay 50. So you can limit your risk like that. Maybe some kind of something like that, a high low before you go to trial so that your client doesn't have the same amount of risk.
There's another risk in that some judges give you an increased sentence if you go to trial.
Well, and the prosecutors always, you know, kind of tell you, well, that deal's not going to be any worse if we have to do the work on this case, if we have to spend the resources. If your client's going to go to trial, the deal's just going to get worse, which is a constitutional right, which I never understand why prosecutors do that. And I tell it to their face that that's just plain wrong. Like, a deal getting worse because my client says he wants to go to trial is a joke and is not in the interest of justice.
But most people don't admit they said that.
Well, I don't care. My point
that
is
happens.
When they say it to me, I point it out to them. Right. We'll put it that way.
But the one thing is, there is a certain practicality about the criminal justice system that I don't think exists in the civil side. And that practicality, I think, shows itself in the plea bargain. And listen, yeah, are there cases where, you know, prosecutors take stands that are unreasonable? Yes. Are there cases where defense lawyers are looking for deals that are unrealistic? Yes. But for the majority of cases out there, I think that the plea bargaining system makes a case more palatable, and people can get their lives just going.
I agree with
lives.
You. And especially for, I hate to say it this way, but especially for guilty people, it gives you an opportunity to admit what you did, you know, do some community service or do something else besides jail time. Or, you know, do something to appease the victim or the state or the judge or whatever it is, and it gives you that opportunity. But especially, I think it's a socioeconomic issue too, because especially for a low-income person, like you're saying, that's sitting in prison and can't pay for a private lawyer, it's a lot harder for them to deal with this entire process. And so a plea deal just becomes an out for them because they realize they're up against it, whether or not they did it.
Right.
And, you know, I just wish there was some other way to deal with it in a high-low type of system, which I've just made up off the top of my head. It's not like I've done any research or thought about this. But I feel like there's got to be something to where we can limit the risk on some of these cases and let them have a trial by jury to see what their peers would actually say about it.
Now you're talking about the continental law of Europe, where a murder, for example, is a life in prison, potentially a capital crime in the United States. There are countries where a murder is a 5-year prison sentence.
Well, okay, so let's talk about one last thing here. So what do you think, or I'm sorry, before we get to appealing a plea, what happens if somebody breaks a plea agreement? So like in federal court, especially, you say this 20-page document that both people sign, you know, either we can talk about two things. Either they break a plea agreement or they don't cooperate like they say they're going to cooperate.
Well, there's a prime example in the Manafort case. They had a deal with Manafort. They say he lied and didn't complete his deal. They broke the plea agreement. They went to trial. He got convicted and he was sent to prison. So when you break a plea agreement, at that point, that's it. You have to either go to trial or you got to hope the prosecutor is nice.
And it's normally not good for the defendant. You know, from the perspective of a plea agreement.
The state can't really break a plea agreement.
That's right. They're going to get in front of the judge and say.
It's not like they're going to throw you in jail for longer than they said they were going to throw you in jail. So is there any plea agreements, just thinking about civil cases, is there any plea agreements that say, like, if you break this plea agreement, you get the max? Or no?
No, can't do that. What they can say is, if you break the plea agreement, all deals are off. For instance, in a plea agreement, it may say, we will recommend the bottom of the guidelines.
Right.
Well, if that's gone, then they're going to start recommending the top of the guidelines.
Right. Yeah, because in civil cases, we can say, all right, we're going to take this settlement, but if you don't pay the totality of the settlement, it turns out to be what the full amount of damages were, you know, whatever it is. So, okay, so how do you appeal? Or what do you file if somebody pled guilty to something, no trial, not a lot of discovery? What are the things that you can argue if somebody took a plea deal? Because it's different than when you go to trial and you lose because you're still maintaining your innocence. You're still saying, I didn't do it. You went to trial, you lost, you appeal it because of something that happened in the trial. How do you appeal a guilty plea on a criminal case where you actually stood there and admitted that you did it and you took whatever the penalty was that you negotiated?
Let's start with saying that right off the bat, that is an incredibly difficult undertaking.
Sure.
Because every judge that I'm aware of, at least in state and federal court, is required to do a plea colloquy with the defendant.
Explain what that is.
And what that means is the judge has to say, this is the deal that I understand you have agreed to. Yes. Have you had time to speak with your lawyer about the terms of this deal?
Do you understand what you're waiving?
You understand that you have rights, then those constitutional rights, you know, you have the right to a trial. You have the right to, you know, have a
call
jury.
Call your witnesses.
That's right.
Are you happy with your lawyer?
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes down the line. And in federal court, they'll actually go through page by page the plea agreement and confirm, are these your signatures? Have you had adequate time to consult with your attorney? Do you agree that this is the deal? Being that all that goes on the record now, if you were to appeal and say, I don't like my deal, you're appeal is most likely going to get thrown out simply because I don't like my deal is not a reason to appeal.
There is one way, though, and that is if you challenge the competency of the lawyer advising you.
Ineffective assistance of counsel, right.
So if that lawyer didn't give you good advice and you can show he didn't do a good job for you, it's possible at that point to get your plea deal withdrawn. But again, statistically, very, very rare.
So are there any other arguments you can make, or is that it just inoffensive? I mean, obviously
well,
you could say coercion.
Hold on.
Or
in federal court, because we had a number of these a few years back, ineffective assistance of counsel is one, but another one was the plea agreements and some of the terms were deemed to be unconstitutional. So then a lot of the defendants that had entered plea agreements with specific terms and language in it had the chance to withdraw those pleas because the terms were deemed to be unconstitutional at the time that they were made.
Very cool. So the whole world of plea bargaining and plea deals, I think it is important in our system. I think like anything else, you know, you can pick or you can poke holes in it, but I think it does serve its purpose. So thanks for being with us today. Hope you guys learned something, and we'll be back with you next week.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Trakos. The experienced lawyers at Trakos, Sartes & Trakos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at tragoslaw.com.